Life Audio.
Welcome to Christian Natural Health with naturopathic Dr. Lauren DeVille. Christian Natural Health is the podcast on how to get and stay healthy, God's way. You'll hear topics on nutrition, exercise, sleep, avoiding toxicity, meditating on scripture, what supplements to take, stress management, defeating anxiety and worry, how to reconcile Eastern medicine approaches with Christianity, and a whole lot more. Now, here's your host, Dr. Lauren.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters April 26th.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters beginning April 26th, join us in making opening night a family day at the theaters.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Welcome back to another episode of Christian Natural Health. Today, I am excited to have Dr. Haley Perlis with us. Dr. Perlis knows what it takes to overcome barriers to achieve peak performance. As an elite alpine ski racer, she competed and trained with the best in the world, pushing herself to the limits time and time again. Now with a PhD in sports psychology, Haley continues to push boundaries and drive peak performance, helping athletes and Fortune 100 executives reach their goals. Haley works with individuals and teams to manage and expand their energy capacity while increasing resilience, focus, and drive. Dr. Perlis is highly sought after as a keynote speaker, professor, author, and consultant to Division I athletes. She's spoken at many events, some of which include Vistage, Tech Canada, Elite Fitness, and Performance Summit Trilogy athletes. She is an adjunct professor at the University of Colorado, lecturing on applied sport and exercise physiology psychology at the graduate level. She has authored several books, including The Ultimate Achievement Journal and The Inside Drive, and her articles have been featured in publications such as Thrive Magazine, Fitness Magazine, Idea Fitness Journal, Epic Times, Telluride, Inside, My Vega, and Beachbody. She earned her PhD at the University of Northern Colorado with an emphasis on sports psychology of sport and physical activity, her MS at the University of Florida in sport pedagogy, and her bachelor's degree at the University of Western Ontario in kinesiology. Haley loves both water and snow skiing. Her favorite meal is anything that requires only chopping or blending. Thank you, Haley. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Lauren. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about why stress management is so important, first of all.
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one is stress isn't going away. So, when we can't control something, then we have to learn how to embrace it and how to be resilient with it and how to use it to our advantage. So in order to, work with the stress that is inevitable in our lives, we need to have certain tools, certain techniques that we can use to embrace it so that we're not just coping. I know I said coping, but we're also thriving with it.
Sure, absolutely. So what are you seeing lately with some of your clients in terms of stress trends? Are things changing these days?
Right now, a lot of the work that I'm doing is on emotional regulation. Okay. So stress is creating a lot of emotional experiences, and emotion trumps logic most of the time. Yeah. And we don't want that to happen. We want to be able to think clearly. We want to be able to think logically and do things that are going to help us instead of hurt us. So really in my practice right now, I'm really trying to help people better regulate, better control their emotions. Because I actually think we have more control over our emotions than we give ourselves credit for. And then once we can do that, we can bring back the logic, bring back a stress mindset that's going to actually help us to flourish and grow.
And so kind of sounds like you're talking about the idea of having that mental manager that can say, hey, maybe you're going in down a little thought loop now. Let's bring it back in, kind of a thing. Yeah.
I like it. I like the mental manager. I've never heard that term. You just gave me a great, yeah, I might steal that from you. I'll give you credit, but I might steal that from you and use it.
I'm sure I stole
mental it. Mental manager.
Very nice. So tell us a little bit about how we can get that. Like, how do you get the idea of, wait a second, let's pull it back in? What are some of the techniques that you help people to employ for that?
Couple of things. Number one is I think it's really important when we talk about emotional regulation first, there are so many different types of emotions. I was in a yoga class this morning and the instructor said we have 86 different types of emotions. Oh. And I've never heard that number. I don't know what she was referencing, but I do know that every emotion that we have falls into four categories. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is really understand those four categories, understand the benefits of each because every emotion serves us. Yeah. But also understand the consequences of each because every emotion can hurt us. Yeah. And then we start understanding, you know, what puts us into a certain emotion, and but then also how we can get out of them.
Mm-hmm. So what are the four categories?
Yeah. So the first one, I think when it comes to stress, we're all very aware of fight or flight, mm-hmm. right? It's our survival emotions. Yeah. So those emotions are anxiety, fear, anger, worry, frustration, all the things that use energy, right? So they get us the rapid heart rate, skin temperature changes, you know, muscle tension, neurotransmitters, cortisol, all those things that are released when we're experiencing that fight or flight. Yeah. Now, the good news is those emotions motivate us.
Right.
Right. True. They help us. Yeah. They initiate movement, but mm-hmm. they are so draining of energy that we experience burnout rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is when we experience that, we want to kind of assess, okay, what do I need to do here from a survival purpose?
Sure. Uh-huh.
But then we need to be able to transfer over to a different emotion. And that second emotion mm-hmm. is what we call optimal emotions.
Okay.
So that's where we're feeling challenged, but passionate and hopeful and excited and mm-hmm. confident and connected. Sure. So it's still using energy.
Right.
You know, we're still climbing mountains,
yeah.
but we're doing so with enthusiasm instead of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. So that was, did I miss the four? Like, so that's one. And then
nope, we're not there yet.
Okay. Got it. All right.
Yeah. So you've got the fight or flight, which is one.
Okay.
And then you have the optimum, which is the second.
Got it. Okay.
And those are really our two stress emotions.
Okay. Got it. Mm-hmm.
But in order to be resilient to stress, we have to have energy. Mm-hmm. And how do you get energy? From recovery. So in addition to the two stress emotions, we then have two recovery emotions.
Okay.
And those recovery emotions are either experienced in a pleasant way, which is more of like peace and calm,
yeah,
and receptive. And then you have what we call forced recovery emotions, mm-hmm. sad, depressed,
okay,
depleted,
yeah,
exhausted.
So it's like what it sounds like to me is that you took the two autonomic nervous systems, like the fight or flight and the rest.
The parasympathetic and the sympathetic, yeah.
Yeah, but then you kind of split them into the positive and negative side of each. I love it. I've never heard that before. Very cool.
Yeah. And I actually like to really think about it as, you know, experiencing them as pleasant versus unpleasant, positive sure. and negative. The negative, what would we typically think of the negative emotions, mm-hmm. they actually serve us.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So that fight or flight can still be a motivator. That sure. forced recovery, even mm-hmm. though it doesn't feel good to be sad, sad can be good for us.
Very, that's true. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So with the concept of burnout, back to that, since I see it all the time, and I'm sure you see it all the time too, how does somebody know when they're in a place of burnout as opposed to in, you know, so people can kind of be trucking along and doing a ton of different things and not recognizing that they're teetering on the edge until they've tipped over? What are some of like the awareness moments that can say you need to scale back and put yourself into the other side of that?
Yeah, great question, Lauren. So what we just mentioned about that forced recovery, the feeling completely depleted and exhausted and sad, that's just one characteristic. It right. does not mean you're burnt out. You could actually just be exhausted.
Right.
But in addition to that emotional and mental exhaustion, if you find yourself, it's called depersonalization, but what it really means is someone or something, a project, a task, a group of a community that you once felt connected to, that you once felt that you wanted to contribute to, you no longer feel that way. The heart motivation has been, you know, is lost, you know, not necessarily gone. Yeah. You just don't feel connected.
Sure. Yeah, totally.
That's one sign. That's a second characteristic of burnout. So emotional and mental exhaustion is one. This depersonalization, something that I really once felt connected to, I no longer feel that related to anymore. That's the second characteristic.
Right.
And then the third one, there's three. The third one is low, big word here, perceived performance. So even though you may be checking off the boxes, like you said, we're carrying on, we're doing our thing, we're making those phone calls, we're folding the laundry, we're walking the dog, like we're, you know, we're our friends and our family and our coworkers were telling us that we're doing everything, but to us, we don't feel like we're good enough. We're not doing a good enough job. Those three together, burnout.
Burnout. Okay. So if somebody recognizes that's me, I'm in that place, what are some of the steps to climb out of that and to allow your body to heal so you can get back to your normal, optimal functioning?
Yeah, sure. Here's the best news. There's only one way to treat and or prevent burnout. Okay. So that's great. We don't have to search far and wide. It's not confusing. And it is recovery, but it's recovery in that pleasant sense. Okay. So we recover to renew some emotional and mental energy, to regain our love for our life, and to build back our confidence. Mm-hmm. And we recover in two ways. One way is what we would all think recovery is stillness, sleep, meditation, deep breathing, the brilliance of boredom.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you remember when we were children and before we had, you know, TV and iPads, when we were kids sitting in the backseat of the car, we were just stare out the window.
Absolutely.
Boredom.
Right.
So that would be stillness recovery. The other way is what we call active recovery, which is really taking yourself out of one task that's creating that stress and burnout and putting yourself into another task, as long as that other task really creates emotional and mental peace and calm. And this is where people are going wrong. People are taking, just yesterday I was working with two individuals and they were saying, you know, we take 15-minute breaks frequently throughout the day. I watch TV, I fold the laundry, I look at social media. So what that is definitely variety in your day, but it's not renewal of energy. They're just distracting themselves away from the stressor, but they're not putting themselves in an activity that creates that peace and calm. Exercise, you know, if you are a reader, reading a novel, listening to music, doing a little bit of restorative yoga, puzzling, all of those things, if they create calm and peace, you're actively recovering.
And so that's something that each individual person has to answer within themselves of like, does this activity bring me peace and restoration or does it deplete me further? Got it.
Right. Right. And am I just kind of like distracting myself away from the stress, but I'm not actually renewing my energy?
Makes sense. So you mentioned that, you know, when we were kids, we didn't have all these screens and all the things. What is your opinion of how smartphones maybe play a role in some of this, in some of this stress perpetuation?
Yeah, huge role. It's an addiction, okay. Right? And, you know, if we look at kids, you know, generally, what are we addicted to? Drugs and alcohol, gambling, and our phones. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's an addiction. And there's a lot of negativity, but I can see some positivity too. But the negativity is, number one, if you're on your phones all day, all long, you're staring into that screen, especially at night, that blue light is basically telling you that it's still daylight. So it's really hard for you to go to sleep. Also, what those phones do, if you're not using it for a phone, you're using it for social media or news, right? There's a lot of negative information being fed into you. There's also some intimidation, some jealousy, some envy. Everyone has a better life than me. Why are, you know, so there's, and it's not real. So there's not a whole lot of authenticity there. So there is a lot of things that are detrimental. Plus, even if we use it for good, because, you know, there is a lot of education. There is a lot of wow, keeping in touch with your friends and being excited for everyone and looking at, whoa, they got to do this. Maybe I can do that. So there was some, you know, motivation, but we don't, many of us don't have the discipline to turn it off.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So again, you're just not being able to turn it off. So I can see the pros and cons. I'm more inclined to want to ask people to turn the phones off. So just put the phones down, unless you're actually going to pick it up and call a friend.
Sure, yeah. There's good and bad ways to use all technology, right? It's like anything else, for sure. So something just as a side note, as you were talking about how it's an addiction. So in my practice, I do a lot of neurotransmitter testing, which is a urine test, shows me breakdown products. And what I'm seeing over and over and over again is that people's catecholamines are in the gutter. Like they're, so dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, adrenaline, and not necessarily always dopamine, although I've seen all three of them in a lot of people, but the adrenaline all the time. And as you're talking about the idea of addiction, that's the dopamine hit. If you're constantly doing that, you're depleting your stores. So recognizing where those things are coming from is absolutely huge, for sure.
Yeah. And don't we want to really take advantage of those dopamine hits? So if we're right. Yeah.
For sure. So, and
so a little bit of it would be great.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, and kind of along those lines is like a good version of the dopamine hit. So you're real big into exercise. Tell us a little bit about how that can be restorative for people and how people can learn to use that to their advantage.
Well, physical activity, so human movement, is the best way to change your emotional state. It is scientifically proven. If you can also get outside while you're participating in this activity, you know, all of the vitamins that we get, the sunlight, everything, earthing, getting your feet in the ground, hugging a tree while you're on a hike somewhere. Right. All of that feeds the soul, and it's the greatest way to quickly change your emotions from an unpleasant to a pleasant. It doesn't only have to be exercise. So there's a couple of things. Number one is it could also, there's exercise, but there's also just movement, and they're not the same thing. Exercise is where we challenge ourselves. Exercise is when we're looking to, you know, build and grow. Movement is just getting blood circulating. And that could be in small movements, large movements, stretching. And you might exercise every day for an hour, but you also may be sitting the rest of the day. So you have to ask yourself, you need both exercise and movement throughout the day to restore that emotional and mental energy.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've seen some of those studies that have suggested that you're better off moving throughout the day in small, like moderate amounts than intensely exercising and then sitting the rest of the day. I find that so fascinating. But the human,
I look at them as two different things completely.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Very cool. So, and you also kind of alluded to yoga and deep breathing and things like that. If somebody's never done this before, where do they start?
A couple of things. When it comes to deep breathing for stress, I work a lot with athletes, and a lot of the athletes that I work with have panic attacks for many reasons, just competitive anxiety, or just the world in which it is right now. A lot of panic attacks. And so what I like is belly breathing. And there's reasons why, and I'll share with you, but belly breathing is literally taking your hand, placing it over your belly. And when you inhale, feel your belly button push into your hand. And when you exhale, feel your belly button contract. And what you're doing is you're bringing your breath from your chest and shoulders, which is what happens when we're feeling that fight or flight stress. And you're bringing it into your diaphragm. And then what you do is maybe you start on a count of two, and then you increase it to three, four, and you go ahead with that. Physiologically, lower your heart rate, change your skin temperature, release muscle tension. Mentally, I'm doing a little bit of choreography here. I'm using visualization, and I'm focused on my core. It's literally practicing a mindfulness technique called centering. My thoughts are literally on my hand, which is on the center of my body. So I'm not thinking about my past, my current, or my future stressor, thinking about my hand on my belly button, feeling my belly button push out, feeling it contract. Emotionally, I get that renewed sense of energy, calm, peace.
Yeah. So a lot of times I've discovered when people aren't really used to meditation, it can be really really difficult to, you know, bring your mind back to the moment. And I'll usually tell them to like focus on your breath, focus on your heart rate, focus on the feel of the chair. But I love the fact that you're incorporating that together with the fact that your hand is on your belly, that gives them something to focus on, makes it so much simpler.
It's tangible. Another thing about meditation that you can do is, I love this, and it kind of gets everybody outside and moving around, but I love asking people just to go out for a 5-minute walk, maybe even 2 minutes, maybe 1 minute, just stick your head out the window. It doesn't matter. But then take a second, 30 seconds, let's say, and just focus on what you see. And then switch to what you hear, and then switch to what you smell, and then switch to maybe, you know, maybe you taste something in the air, and then switch to how the ground feels under you. So what you're doing is going from one sense to another sense, but that's an active type of meditation, allowing you to get really present and calm your mind with a little bit of instruction. Because meditation can actually, it's funny, it's a recovering technique, but it can actually feel quite stressful when you're starting.
Yeah, if you're trying real hard and you're struggling. Yeah.
So this way, you know, walking and just really getting in touch with each sense is the way for you to start the initiation of meditation.
Love it. It's so interesting is that as you're talking, I'm thinking of like our ancestors would be so baffled by why this is even necessary, because it was something that was so natural historically, but because of the way our world is, our everything is so fast paced, we have to really take that moment to get back into, you know, what used to be totally natural. So you also talk a little bit about the idea of recognizing when you're fixated on wanting a particular outcome in a certain situation and letting go. Easier said than done. What do people do in that scenario if there's something that they really want and it's outside their control?
You know, I'm just going to go to my yoga instructor today. And in my personal life, there is something that my boyfriend and I really, really want, and we're not getting it right now. And my yoga instructor this morning, she said, stop trying to focus on what's right or what's wrong, and focus on what's working and not what's not working. And so that allows me to think, okay, my life is what it is right now. We don't currently have what it is that we want. What's still working in our lives? You know, where are we still connected? Where are we still moving? Where are we still growing? Where are we still learning? So you really, what's still working? Where am I healthy? Mm-hmm. And to me, that allows us to live with the fact that life is sometimes unfair, to live with the fact that not everything is within our control. But if we stay present and we still focus on what is working, we're okay with that. In addition, just yesterday, actually, I was being interviewed on a radio show, and it was a very similar question. And I brought up Zac Brown, the singer, the songwriter. And Zac Brown has a song called Letting Go. Oh. And the lyrics, which I have a book of lyrics and quotes that I just keep when I love. And I wrote his lyrics down. Keep your heart above your head and your eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it talks about how you focus on the things that you can change, forgive the ones you can't. You got to let them go. So I believe, you know, this may be beyond the scope of today, but the act of forgiveness.
Huge. Absolutely.
Huge. Huge. Forgiveness allows us to let go of things that we want that we don't have. Mm-hmm. But there's something there. There is some type of connection.
No, I definitely get that for sure. And it sounds like essentially you're just describing the concept of gratitude practice, looking at what you do have so that you can kind of just shift the perspective. So yeah, that's great. Love it. So how can we learn to identify triggers that tend to make us stressed, and to the extent that we're capable, back to kind of the control question, how do we kind of rearrange our circumstances so that we can at least minimize those triggers that tend to bring those things up for us?
Sure. So I actually think it's fairly straightforward, to be honest. If we really sit down and focus for a moment and get real with ourselves, you know, look at the last week, look at the last couple of days, we're pretty clear on what we know gets the best of us. We really know our triggers. I don't think we have to search far and wide to understand our triggers, but what we do need to do is engage in some training. And so I'm going to use myself as an example. I'm a fairly pleasant individual, but when I do find myself getting angry, that emotion, I used to tend to linger in it way too long. So I too was going through exactly what I was sharing with you, Lauren, at the very beginning, emotional regulation. And I wanted to train myself so that when I get triggered, I'm ready. I'm ready to not just protect myself, but I'm ready to embrace and I'm ready to move forward and I'm ready to stay present. So for myself, I had training calendar reminders at 11:30, 3:30, 5:30, 9 p.m. It does not matter the time. I just knew that I'm pretty good in the morning. It's when the day continues on that I start getting triggered. So it's not only what triggers you, but also the time of day. I think we're all familiar with that.
Really? Uh-huh.
So at 11:30, my calendar reminder said, let it be. And whether I needed to let something be in that moment or not, doesn't matter. I stopped, took inventory of my emotions and my thoughts. Mm-hmm. Is there something that I need to change? And if there was, I would listen to music, go for a walk, call a friend, look at a funny picture, like just do something for myself. Mm-hmm. Same thing at 11:30. It didn't say, let it be. It said, chill the F out. Uh-huh. And then you ask yourself, is there something that I need to chill out from? 5:30, it was, are your emotions serving you? And 9 p.m., it's present. And again, those four times of the day, I may have gotten my calendar reminder and I may be like, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also may not have been. And yep. Then as you engage in this training, when I do find myself getting angry, I've done the training. I have the skill set. I'm ready to use the tools for me to not stay angry, use my anger wisely, and then transition out.
Very smart. Yep. So when you know what your triggers are, you can set yourself up for success so that you know that, like, almost like you're training yourself to build a new habit, to check in with yourself on a regular basis. So yeah.
I also think that we can prevent. So for example, nutrition, let's just go with nutrition. You know, so many people, you know, and I'm definitely like the evening munchies, right? Like the evening is when I want to have the worst foods for myself. And, you know, maybe some people transitioning home from work, that's when they kind of, you know, go into the pantry and eat whatever. Again, it's usually around the same time. So for me, let's say 8 o'clock was the time that I would, you know, start comfort eating and start emotional eating. So what I did for myself is at 7:30, whether I was hungry or not, at 7:30, I ate something healthy. And it could have just been, you know, drinking water and lemon, but I ate something healthy to prevent the trigger at 8 p.m.
Absolutely. Have you read, there's a book by Charles Duhigg, The Power of Habit. You read that one?
Before. I know that I haven't read it, but I do know The Power of Habits. Yes.
So I usually tell my patients, he's got this great story at the end of it, where he says that every day at 3 o'clock, he found himself craving a cookie and he was trying to figure out what is it that he's actually craving. And so he'd brainstorm alternative behaviors so that at 3 o'clock, when that trigger hit, he would do some other behavior. And if he still wanted the cookie, he'd go eat the cookie, but then he'd figure out what he's going to try the next day. And what he ultimately figured out is at 3 o'clock, he was bored. And he had to go down to the cafeteria to get the cookie. And then his desire for boredom was better. So he did, instead, when 3 o'clock hit, he'd go chat with a coworker. And then he didn't want the cookie anymore because he satisfied. Yeah. So that's what that reminded me. I love it.
The only way to eliminate one behavior is to replace it with something else.
Yes. And that's exactly what he says. So very cool.
Yeah. Don't think of the purple elephant. That just does not work. You've got to think blue penguin or whatever it might be.
Have a different idea in mind for sure. Love it. So tell us a little bit about like time management you work with a lot of high achievers. So the super type A people who fill their schedules, or maybe the people that, you know, don't know how to say no, and they are pleasing everybody else, but either way, they end up with way too many things on their plate and they're trying to do too much. Where do people start to begin to kind of scale back?
Sure. And there's so much time management tools out there. I actually focus on incorporating the recovery bouts or recovery pauses in our day. And those could be 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, even less than 1 minute. So it's really, I don't even look at people's schedules. I actually for to see, well, you know, maybe you should put this here or that there. I'm actually purely focused on incorporating recovery frequently throughout the day. And it really depends, on your career. It depends on your lifestyle. It depends on a lot. You know, if you're a surgeon and doing 8-hour surgeries, you can't simply, you can't excuse yourself. So, but then there's other times when you can actually take 5 minutes every 60 minutes or so. So, but the point is to really look at recovery bouts. And from my perspective, time management has to come with a mindset change. So my background is sports psychology. Professional athletes do not recover when they have the time. And that's typically what we say to ourselves. I'll recover when I have the time. Professional athletes also do not recover as a reward. But we say to ourselves, I'll recover when I get all these emails done, once I get all these things done. It's the wrong mindset. Professional athletes have recovery built into their performance, wellness, and happiness programs. We need to understand that mental and emotional recovery is a non-negotiable. So once we, and here's the best thing about it, once you start to incorporate, again, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, even less than 1 minute, if you just have like a bunch of calls to make, between every call, take 1 minute for gratitude, 1 minute to move your body, 1 minute to listen to a, 1 minute of a song, 1 minute for belly breathing. But what happens is when you take these recovery bouts, when you go back to your stressors, you're more efficient, you're more effective, you make less errors, time actually frees up.
Absolutely. Yeah, so true.
So we've got to change our mindset about the recovery piece. It's a non-negotiable. And then just go ahead and reap the benefits from there.
Great. And so you also talk about one of the techniques for stress management is the idea of finding your purpose, which is kind of a big topic. So where do people start as far as, finding something that brings them joy that they can begin to focus on as a priority that they can place in their schedule and their lives?
Yeah. So purpose is huge. When the going gets tough, I know a lot of people say the tough go shopping, but when the going gets tough, it is your purpose that will get you out of bed and help you go right, left through life. And a lot of people, a lot of my teachings is, I think, shifting people's focus too, because when people think about their purpose, a common thought is to think about their roles in life. What's my purpose? Well, to be the best mom I can be. What's my purpose? To be the best husband, to be the best leader, to be the best teacher, to, those are actually roles that we play in life. Yeah. What our purpose is, are who we are when we are our best self, what our top values are, what impact we want to make on the world. Those are really purpose. I'll use myself as an example to help. So when I think of my three best words, who I am when I'm my absolute best, three words, right? It's like the sunshine is just shining all over me, and what the sun gives the earth is what my brightness gives me, bright. I'm curious as opposed to judgmental. Mm-hmm. Curious. I want to learn. I want to understand, which helps me to listen. And then I'm a strength finder. Mm-hmm. I look for everyone's strengths, including myself, when I'm my best. Those three words are really a daily representation of my purpose. Those three words, bright, curious, and strength finder, who and what I want to be for myself and for others. And I use those three best words to be a teacher, to be a girlfriend, to be a daughter, to be a sister, to be a friend. And when I'm having a bad day, which happens, when I focus on my three best words, or my top values in life, which for me is health, love, and adventure. Those things, that's my purpose. That gets me out of bed and allows me to be the role that I am. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So then that's the motivator for you when you feel like you're at that low ebb.
Got it. 95% of the time, I'm not going to say it's perfect, but 95% of the time, it allows me to do something for myself and others.
So what have I not asked you that you want to make sure you leave with our audience?
Let's see. What have you not asked me? I think it's really, here's a great technique. So I mentioned, in less than 1 minute, sometimes recovery bouts, and you had mentioned earlier, gratitude. I'm spreading this little reframe around because in my trainings, people just find it a huge aha and it's helping. So I want to share it with your audience as well. One way to reframe our day, when we're really unpleasantly stressed, when we're feeling that fight or flight, or even that forced recovery, we look at our day as what we have to do next, right? What do I have to do next? What email do I have? What kid do I have? What laundry do I have? What I have to do next. Mm-hmm. That keeps us feeling unpleasant. Let's change it up. What do I get to do next? Mm-hmm. Who do I get to support? How do I get to be challenged? What do I get to learn? How do I get to be pushed? Mm-hmm. All of the gets to, again, it doesn't change your day because sometimes your day is not controllable, but it does get you to look at it in a little bit more of a different light, a little bit more of a challenge, passionate, connected, excited light. So, and what do I get to do next is gratitude for you and your life.
Absolutely. I love it. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Best place is my website. So drhaleyperlus.com. So just DR and then HaleyPerlus.com. You can opt in for weekly mental toughness moments. You can connect with me directly. Best place to find me is the website.
Fantastic. I will link to that in the show notes. And thank you so much for all of your time and wisdom, Haley. This has been great.
Thank you, Lauren. I'm so happy to be here.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Looking for a holistically minded healthcare practitioner who truly treats root cause rather than symptom suppression? Unfortunately, even in the alternative healing professions, this isn't a given. That's why I've created wholehealthdoctor.com, a resource to help connect patients to healthcare practitioners in their area who share a root cause philosophy. Alternatively, most of the practitioners listed also practice telehealth. So if there isn't anyone local to you, you can still find a great practitioner to help you regain optimal health. Go to wholehealthdoctor.com. That's wholehealthdr.com. Type in your location or just the specialty that you're looking for and find the practitioner who's right for you.
Thanks for listening to Christian Natural Health. This show is run by you, so please write in with topic and guest suggestions for future shows. For more great content, subscribe to Dr. Lauren's blog at www.drlaurendeville.com or follow her on Facebook or Twitter at Dr. Lauren Deville. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share it with your friends and give us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It really helps us to stand out so other people can discover great content as well. Have a great week and God bless you.
Looking for ways to stay positive? Brighten your day with the free Story Behind podcast. Hear weekly short stories that showcase true joy, love, and hope. Listen now at lifeaudio.com or by searching for Story Behind wherever you get your podcasts.